Hey everyone, it's Jay Shetty, and I am so excited to let you know that my latest podcast interview is with the one and only Tom Hanks.
I have left many wonderful atmosphere or a loving atmosphere without thinking, oh, things were really wonderful back then. I wish I was back there. Jay, I don't think I've ever thought that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hey, I'm Jacquees Thomas, the host of a brand new Black Effect original series, Black Lit, the podcast for diving deep into the rich world of Black literature. Black Lit is for the page turners, for those who listen to audiobooks while running errands or at the end of a busy day. From thought-provoking novels to powerful poetry, we'll explore the stories that shape our culture. Listen to Black Lit on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Gracias Come Again, a podcast by Honey German, where we get real and dive straight into todo lo actual y viral. We're talking música, los premios, el chisme, and all things trending in my cultura. I'm bringing you all the latest happening in our entertainment world and some fun and impactful interviews with your favorite Latin artists, comedians, actors, and influencers. Each week, we get deep and raw life stories, combos on the issues that matter to us, and it's all packed with gems, fun, straight up comedia, and the sazón that only nuestra gente can spread. Listen to Gracias Come Again on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tom Rhodes loves sports.
I wrestled. I just wrestled year round. I got on the Iowa freestyle team and wrestled Olympic style. And 1,000 years ago, won the state freestyle championship and second Greco-Roman.
What weight class were you wrestling?
I was 175 for that tournament, and I didn't cut any weight at all.
Tom didn't have to work out. He worked on a farm.
I just decided I'm going to go in there, farm strong.
Farm strong. I like that.
I met Tom at the annual Innocence Network conference in April 2024.
You look like you could be a sportscaster. Like, I was like, I've never seen someone get out of prison with such nice teeth.
Now he does.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had one viable tooth in my head when I left prison, and the rest of them needed a lot of work. And so I had no choice, but I had a lot of work done.
Wow. Well, now you have your sportscaster look. So.
I'm hoping to land something after talking to you. My name is Tom Rhodes, and I was wrongly incarcerated for 8,932 days, about 24 and a half years.
From Lava for Good, this is Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Today, Tom Rhodes. Tom Rhodes was born in June 1959 to Lois and Daniel Rhodes.
My parents farmed and my mom worked for the bank in a little town of Duncombe, Iowa.
Tom is the oldest of four kids. He was 12 when his sister was born.
We kind of grew up in a work hard, play hard environment.
There was always work to be done on the farm. Tom's brother Ron says they were constantly on the go.
You know, Dad would holler up in the morning, "Boys, time to get up." And, you know, we were expected to be downstairs in, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. So we were moving equipment from farm to farm or out fixing equipment.
Between livestock and raising cattle and
harvesting or planting.
But really wonderful life, actually.
Tom probably had it the hardest of everyone because it was less automated when he was younger. So it was a lot more physical labor. He was probably my dad's right-hand man. So
are you getting emotional right now?
Yeah, I'm just, I guess, just thinking back to the way our lives were, and just thinking back about, you know, how we all kind of worked together and how good my parents were. you know, to us all.
Where did life take you?
Yeah, I graduated from Webster City High School in 1977, and I graduated from Westmar University with the sociology, psychology, and a business minor.
Tom wanted to be a wrestling coach and teacher.
That was my plan.
But his plans changed.
And I ended up going into agri sales in the seed and fertilizer industry.
Still, Tom thrived. He was good at sales.
He's just got a really charismatic personality. He's very outgoing. He's fun. He's funny. He just has a way like of just, you know, making you feel at ease.
But before his success as a big-time sales VP, Tom was just a college kid who one day saw a pretty girl.
I met Jane at college my junior year.
It was 1979.
And she was a farm girl from Northwest Iowa. And 5'7", blue eyes.
With long blonde hair.
Just really pretty.
Tom was smitten.
She had a kind of a down home country girl flavor.
Not even a year after they met, Tom and Jane were married in 1980.
So you met Jane and you guys were like head over heels.
Yeah, it was kind of a quick romance, and we loved each other and each other's families. It was a good fit. I think that we had so much in common from like a work ethic and, you know, be good to family and love one another. It was just, we were raised the same way. I really think that was the essence of it.
They were always like joking around with one another, like he would tease her.
Tom's brother, Ron, again.
She was just probably the sweetest person. You just sense that she loved you and she cared about you.
It sounds like she was more than just your brother's wife. You really felt like she was part of your family.
Oh, yeah. She was just an amazing person. She had such a great spirit about her when you were around her. That's what I would say about Jane.
In 1982, they had their first son, Eric, and their second son, Jason, in 1987. Tom and Jane and the boys moved all around for Tom's work in agricultural sales, but eventually they landed in Mankato, Minnesota in the early 90s.
The kids really flourished in the school district there, and Jason and Eric were both in sports, football, did a little wrestling and basketball. And so I tried to coach and be a part of things, whether it be assistant coach or whatever I, you know, could do to step up to be there.
For a couple of years in the early 90s, Tom and Jane landed on hard times.
We went through a little bit of a rough patch communication-wise. I don't think things were as good as they could.
They were also struggling financially.
People go through difficult times in marriages. I've been married for 18 years, and I'm sure that they had difficult times, but it wasn't like I ever felt like if they felt like they didn't love one another or whatever. I feel like they were both the type of people that would come together and say, hey, well, what are we going to do about this? What's best for the boys, I think, is what they would be thinking in that scenario. If they had or went through trouble, it was never in front of us or the family or anything like that. And I just never felt that Tom, knowing his love for Jane and for the boys, I never felt that he would have intentionally hurt her or done anything harmful.
Hey everyone, it's Jay Shetty, and I am so excited to let you know that my latest podcast interview is with the one and only Tom Hanks. Tom rarely does long-form interviews, so I was so grateful to have the time to dive deep into family, mental health, and the mindset behind his long successful career.
Dude, I travel light. And I can travel light emotionally. I'm done. There's stuff that I cannot control. I have left many a wonderful atmosphere, or a loving atmosphere, or a friendly atmosphere, And Ernie Banks, the ball player for the Chicago Cubs, without ever looking back, without thinking, oh, things were really wonderful back then. I wish I was back there. Jay, I don't think I've ever thought that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hola, mi gente. It's Honey German, and I'm bringing you Gracias, Come Again, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of Latin culture, música, películas, and entertainment with some of the biggest names in the game. If you love hearing real conversations with your favorite Latin celebrities, artists, and culture shifters, this is the podcast for you. We're talking real conversations with our Latin stars, from actors and artists to musicians and creators, sharing their stories, struggles, and successes. You know it's going to be filled with chisme, laughs, and all the vibes that you love. Each week, we'll explore everything from music and pop culture to deeper topics like identity, community, and breaking down barriers in all sorts of industries. Don't miss out on the fun, el té caliente, and life stories. Join me for Gracias Come Again, a podcast by Honey German, where we get into todo lo actual y viral. Listen to Gracias Come Again on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, I'm Jessica Capshaw.
And this is Camilla Luddington.
And we have a new podcast, Call It What It Is. You may know us from Graceland Memorial, but did you know that we are actually besties in real life?
And as all besties do, we navigate the highs and lows of life together.
And what does that look like? 1,000 pep talks, 1,000,000 I've got yous, some very urgent I'm coming overs. Because, I don't know, let's face it, life can get even crazier than a season finale of Grey's Anatomy.
And now here we are, opening up the friendship circle to you.
Someone's cheating?
We've got you on that.
In-laws are in-line?
Let's get into it.
Toxic friendship?
Air it out.
We're on your side to help you with your concerns. Talk about ours, and every once in a while, bring on an awesome guest to get their take on the things that you bring us.
While we may be unlicensed to advise, we're going to do it anyway.
Listen to Call It What It Is on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
By 1996, things were on the up. Jane got a job with good pay and benefits.
I was doing well at my job and getting bigger bonus checks. And we sold our first house and bought a house that was completely redone with a great room built on, a new basement underneath of it that had a fire. And it was kind of our dream place.
Tom was VP at the seed company I mentioned earlier.
We were doing better than we had. And our life was, and we were happy and felt like we were also enjoying the success of our careers.
They had finally made it.
I mean, y'all had a boat. You must have been doing well.
We had had a couple of different boats, but we mainly had jet skis and done that and tubed and wakeboarded behind the bigger jet skis and stuff. We did a lot of stuff on the water. Ever since we moved to Minnesota, we kind of lived on the water.
I went up to a vacation with them in northern Minnesota. The family, basically my parents and Tom's family, had rented a house on a lake, and I went up there for 2 or 3 days and spent time with them boating and fishing, and they just had a good time. You know, they just were down to earth, but like to have fun. We were growing up, we didn't do a lot of vacationing and stuff like that, but one summer I remember vividly kind of going and just having a blast. Tom teaching me how to ski, and just everybody having fun together and being a family, doing the family stuff.
Tom and Jane loved being out on the water. And when the boys were asleep,
Jane and I would have a drink or two and go out.
On the night of August 2nd, the family was on another vacation.
We had let the boys always play in the pool at the inn. And that night, they just were out from all the, vacationing and stuff, just tired out.
So Tom and Jane left the boys in their hotel and took the boat out on Green Lake for a moonlight ride.
We were just relaxing and talking. It was so peaceful. And we were discussing about, you know, getting back and getting the boys started in school and sports season was going to be kicking off for football. So it was a lot of fun things to look forward to.
It was getting late, so they decided to call it a night.
And we went north, and that's when she fell out.
Tom says he saw Jane lean forward. She seemed to have dropped something.
Later, we found out it was an earring. And she went to pick something up. I thought she was just turning to sit down beside me. The moon was to the right. I glanced to the right to navigate, looked back, and saw her shoes going over.
Tom says he was frantic.
I was in emergency mode trying to save Jane and was looking. I looked so hard. I swear I thought I saw her. And so I jumped out and didn't find anything and quickly learned that I had jumped off the back of the boat with the point facing south and pushed the boat away from me. And I had I was so exhausted from what had happened and searching in the water. I almost didn't make it back to the boat myself.
But he did.
And then I know I did circles. I don't know if I zigzagged too, but I tried to cover the area because I thought she had to be there. And if she was unconscious, I could maybe find her floater. I need CPR, so I thought I could save her. But I didn't find her.
Tom eventually beached the boat and ran into a restaurant for help.
The night clerk let me in, and I was drenched from head to toe, exhausted, trying to talk, and almost throwing up all at the same time.
Soon, law enforcement showed up and helped in the search. They also questioned Tom about the night, but he had other things on his mind.
I kept telling him I want to go back out and search for my wife. I want to go back out on my boat. You guys have got my boat and the other boat. I want to go be back and be part of a search, and they wouldn't let me. So that was probably the most difficult thing other than telling the boys, obviously.
Their boys, still tucked in bed.
That was the hardest thing. I mean, to, you know, look into my son's beautiful blue eyes and have to see that kind of pain.
The next morning, some fishermen came across a body in the water. It was Jane.
I'd have done anything to not have to tell them that about their losing their mom.
Tom, this is my partner, Dan Hartog.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Almost 2 weeks after Jane's body was found, police brought Tom into the Kandy, Ohio Sheriff's Station for questioning.
This has been the hardest thing in my life by far, losing my wife of 16 years. And
police had questioned Tom the night Jane fell into the water. And now, following a few days of investigation, they wanted to go over that night again.
He said, you're not under arrest or anything like that. We asked you to come down here to talk to us about the accident because that night it was confusing. There's a lot of things going on. There's people.
And they also had a report from the medical examiner.
The body's brought down to Dr. McGee. Did you ever hear of him? Okay. Yeah. He's a forensic pathologist in Ramsey County. All right.
Right at the beginning of the case, at the beginning of the investigation, the medical examiner didn't really have any medical evidence to support the idea that Tom was guilty of premeditated murder.
This is Jim Mayer, legal director at the Great North Innocence Project.
But he had suspicions.
Suspicions influenced by the theories of the police.
When you went out there that evening with your wife, did you have any intentions to harm her?
No. Did you? Absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not. No way.
Okay. How did those, and I'm hoping you can help me out here, if you could really think how that mark could have gotten on her face.
The first doctor to look at Jane's body found bruising on her face, head, and a cut to the right side of her mouth. Then, the forensic pathologist who performed the autopsy, Dr. Michael McGee, found hemorrhaging beneath the facial injuries. Her death was initially ruled undetermined. So the police kept digging.
Was there trouble in the marriage?
Did you guys ever talk about divorce? Was there an ever period in your marriage where you were talking divorce?
Did the family have debts? Was there life insurance involved?
Did you have any type of insurance, like on your mortgage, where if somebody passes away, that helps pay the mortgage?
Remember, Tom and Jane had struggled financially for a few years right before this. So they found that.
You know, these are all totally commonplace things, but they weaved all of that stuff together into a story of a man who was desperate and wanted to get out of his marriage, but couldn't afford it and wanted the life insurance money.
Police had also found out about the rocky years in their relationship.
Just finding out what we learned, Tom, is that there were some rough spots in your marriage, okay? And
there were, but those were long behind us. We haven't had any problems recently. Mm-hmm.
On top of everything, police also said Tom was, quote, not grieving properly.
Yeah. Imagine that. That's quite a bold statement. How do you tell if someone's had a loss how they should grieve? I think that's a personal thing. And I totally grieved with my family, with my sons, and took care of them. And did my best. And I kept a relationship with Dane's family and informed them as things were unfolding with the legal system as well.
As the months passed, with all these new suspicions being brought up by the police, the pathologist, Dr. Michael McGee, decided to give his initial report on Jane's death a second look to see if he could figure out what had happened to Jane.
Becoming, you know, his own version of a detective.
Marriage troubles, debts, alleged suspicious grieving behavior.
What you end up having is a medical examiner who, in his initial review, concludes that the medical findings don't support homicide. Looking into what the detectives are looking at and then reverse himself and decide, yes, now the medical findings support homicide.
Dr. Michael McGee changed his findings from undetermined to homicide. After more than a year of investigation, police had their prime suspect in sight, and on December 9th, 1997, a grand jury indicted Thomas Rhodes for murder.
Hey everyone, it's Jay Shetty, and I am so excited to let you know that my latest podcast interview is with the one and only Tom Hanks. Tom rarely does long-form interviews, so I was so grateful to have the time to dive deep into family, mental health, and the mindset behind his long, successful career.
Dude, I travel light. And I can travel light emotionally. I'm done. There's stuff that I cannot control. I have left many a wonderful atmosphere, or a loving atmosphere, or a friendly atmosphere. And Ernie Banks, the ball player for the Chicago Cubs, without ever looking back, without thinking, oh, things were really wonderful back then. I wish I was back there. Jay, I don't think I've ever thought that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hey friends, I'm Jessica Capshaw.
And this is Camilla Luddington.
And we have a new podcast, Call It What It Is. You may know us from Graceland Memorial, but did you know that we are actually besties in real life?
And as all besties do, we navigate the highs and lows of life together.
And what does that look like? 1,000 pep talks, 1,000,000 I've got yous, some very urgent I'm coming overs. Because, I don't know, let's face it, life can get even crazier than a season finale of Grey's Anatomy.
And now here we are, opening up the friendship circle to you.
Someone's cheating?
We've got you on that.
In-laws are in-lying?
Let's get into it.
Toxic friendship?
Air it out.
We're on your side to help you with your concerns. Talk about ours, and every once in a while, bring on an awesome guest to get their take on the things that you bring us.
While we may be unlicensed to advise, we're going to do it anyway.
Listen to Call It What It Is on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hola, mi gente. It's Honey German, and I'm bringing you Gracias, Come Again, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of Latin culture, música, películas, and entertainment with some of the biggest names in the game. If you love hearing real conversations with your favorite Latin celebrities, artists, and culture shifters, this is the podcast for you. We're talking real conversations with our Latin stars, from actors and artists to musicians and creators, sharing their stories, struggles, and successes. You know it's going to be filled with chisme, laughs, and all the vibes that you love. Each week, we'll explore everything from music and pop culture to deeper topics like identity, community, and breaking down barriers in all sorts of industries. Don't miss out on the fun, el té caliente, and life stories. Join me for Gracias Come Again, a podcast by Honey German, where we get into todo lo actual y viral. Listen to Gracias Come Again on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We didn't know how to respond. We didn't know, how to help him.
This is Tom's brother, Ron, again.
And it was, it was so hard that time in our life, thinking back to the way it affected us as a family, the way it affected Tom and his family, his young family, the way it affected my mom and dad. They were very scared when Tom was indicted. Just because, he had always tried to cooperate, and we just never thought that, my brother would do anything to hurt Jane intentionally.
Tom went to trial the following year, in July 1998. He had the support of Ron and his parents and many family and friends who believed Tom wouldn't have committed such a crime. But the trial prosecutor, John Dougherty, said otherwise. He said Tom and Jane had a lot of recent debt from their new lifestyle, the house, the boat, and a new car. Dougherty also brought up their previous marriage troubles. He said Tom wanted a divorce, but didn't want to pay child support. So he planned to get rid of Jane and make it look accidental. That way, he could cash in on her life insurance policy and have his boys. A win-win. But these were all theories. So the prosecution needed an expert to make their whole case legitimate.
The prosecution's case was largely built around the testimony of Dr. Michael McGee. That was really the linchpin of the state's case. What Dr. McGee testified to was that he could tell from the condition of Jane's body that there had been a struggle on the boat.
Remember, there was bruising, hemorrhaging, and a cut on Jane's face. Dr. McGee said the injuries were the result of a fight between Tom and Jane.
And he also testified that he knew he could tell from the condition of Jane's body that she had been struck multiple times by the boat after she had fallen into the water. That was very powerful evidence for the jury to hear.
And Dr. McGee wasn't done.
He brought out a clay model and displayed it on a table for the jury to look at. And this clay model showed awful discoloration all over Jane's face and head.
Dr. McGee used a life-size clay model of Jane's head, depicting a severely bruised face, to show that her injuries couldn't have been accidental.
And anyone who would look at this model would be horrified to think about what must have happened to this person.
Tom couldn't believe the things he was being accused of doing to Jane. Grabbing her by the neck, pushing her over, and running her over multiple times with the boat.
I knew it was a lie, but my attorney wasn't prepared to handle Dr. McGee.
Tom's defense attorney was Michael College. Although Tom says that College did a poor job on cross, he did have a qualified expert. He called Dr. Lindsay Thomas to refute Dr. McGee.
Dr. Lindsay Thomas pretty much went against McGee 100% and refuted everything that they had said.
Dr. Lindsay Thomas testified that Jane's face indeed had internal hemorrhaging on both sides, but not because of multiple intentional blows with the boat. She said it was because the blood from the forehead injury drained into her face and settled there.
Anyone who knows about drowning victims in forensic pathology will tell you where you have a drowning victim who has been floating face down for 13 hours or however long it was, you're going to have the pooling of blood in certain areas. And so this doesn't reflect that she was beaten all over her face and head. What it reflects was that blood by virtue of gravity, will pool in a certain area when a body that is no longer circulating blood stays in a certain position for a period of time.
And that's not new science in 1996. That should have been known.
Absolutely. Absolutely should have been known.
After 2 weeks of trial, the jury was sent to deliberate.
I was really, really concerned, but I also believed that you couldn't be convicted if you're innocent. I thought that there was enough that they could see through Dr. McGee and hopefully believe, you know, Dr. Thomas. But I was wrong.
On July 29th, 1998, Thomas Rhodes was convicted of first-degree premeditated murder and sentenced to mandatory life in prison.
How did Tom's conviction affect you all?
Just heartbreaking, you know, first of all, to lose my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
I think that was just the hardest thing. She was such a good mom, such a good person, and seeing them together and their boys, just it was just a heartache for, I mean, that was so hard.
When Tom Rhodes got to prison in his late 30s, he says he was completely out of his element.
I was raised by really compassionate people, and kindness is kind of seen as weakness. So you have to fight. You have to stand up for yourself. You have to do whatever necessary. And so I just fought and didn't win always.
Tom felt like he was becoming a shell of who he was. But when Ron and his parents visited, he was reminded.
So you just tell us, hey, when you get in here, you can give me a hug. Please give me a hug. You just, Tom would just want a hug, wanted to have a little bit of contact with us and tell us that he loved us and how much he appreciated us, you know, coming there.
Ron says particularly his parents.
They were troopers. I mean, driving, you know, 5-6 hours one way, you know, and over years and years, they did that to support Tom and be there for all of us, really. If I could make a trip, they would help pay for the expenses to make sure that we could go visit Tom. And, you know, it was hard. It was hard to see him in those circumstances, but he always had such a great spirit about him when we'd go visit him or when we talked to him on the phone that I'm like, how could this guy be going through everything he's gone through and still have this type of a attitude and a spirit? That was probably the thing that made us want to go visit him, even though it wasn't a very fun place to visit.
But Tom was putting on a face. He says he didn't want his family, especially the boys, worrying about him.
I actually had two instances where I was wanting to check out. Couldn't take it anymore and was severely depressed by it all, for sure. I put a canteen bag rope over a electrical conduit in my cell in Stillwater and tried and woke up. The sharpness of the metal above the conduit cut it, and I woke up unconscious with what remained of my attempt rope around my neck, near the toilet in my cell.
Do your boys know that?
I don't think so.
They're going to know now.
I'm not proud of that fact, and I don't want them to think that I, you know, was taking the coward's way out. I was just in a dark place and was missing them and my family so much.
But Tom decided he wasn't going to let depression win.
I want to ask you about the dog program. That was something you credited to kind of saving you in there.
Yeah. I worked as a mental health mentor. And after you're seg-free there a year, I had the opportunity to get in the dog program. I mainly worked with large male pit bulls and some small pit bulls. Yeah, mine too. You know, 70, 80-pound big pit bulls were just so wonderful for my soul while I was helping them become adopted. I was enjoying the pleasure of training them. And they got good homes, and I got to have a dog in myself. So you can't beat that. That's good medicine.
Tom also started fighting again, but this time for his innocence.
Tom wrote to us a long time ago, more than a decade ago, asking for our assistance.
Jim says when he and the Great North Innocence Project started looking at Tom's case, something big stood out.
Dr. Lindsay Thomas, who was a medical examiner, forensic pathologist who testified at Tom's trial, was always convinced and remains convinced to this day that Tom was innocent and that the testimony against him at his trial, the forensic testimony, was totally off base. And so she was a big champion of Tom's from the beginning in convincing us that his case was worth a look and something we needed to be involved in.
But they had a big challenge.
The way Minnesota law works in these cases, once it's been over 2 years since your conviction's final, you can't even get into court to present your new evidence unless you can satisfy the court that it proves your innocence by clear and convincing evidence. Now, how are you going to do that in Tom's case, where it's an entirely circumstantial case? How can he prove that negative, that he didn't cause Jane's death?
Yes.
I challenge you to come up with the evidence that's going to prove it. He's not going to have DNA evidence. He's not going to show that somebody else did it. The point is that no crime occurred at all.
The years passed and Tom filed multiple post-conviction reliefs. All were denied. Tom's father passed in 2014, and within a year, his mom got really sick.
The nursing home didn't want us to take her out to go visit Tom, and they said, no, she has a hard time swallowing food and different things. She was so frail. She weighed about 90 pounds. She just felt like skin and bones, but she was determined that she wanted to go see my brother.
So Ron took his mom to see Tom.
It was the last time he ever saw my mom.
Both of Tom's parents died while he was still in prison.
It was super hard knowing, you know, how hard they fought to free Tom and how amazing they were at supporting all of our family and just, you know, being so strong to help us get through things. It was tragic.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Keith Ellison. I'm the Attorney General for the state of Minnesota.
Finally, in 2021, the Minnesota Conviction Review Unit was established as a partnership between the Great North Innocence Project and the Minnesota Attorney General's Office.
Every criminal case has room for error because the justice system is run by human beings, and human beings make mistakes, do the wrong thing, and don't always get it right.
Tom's case was selected to be reinvestigated.
We ended up with 9 expert opinions. 9 of them all said Dr. McGee was wrong. They would never call this a homicide. We got the who's who of forensic pathologists with specific expertise in drowning. We came forward with new evidence from new studies from recent years about the physical findings you would expect to see in accidental drowning victims, which mapped on perfectly to what you saw in Jane's case.
They all concluded that she was not struck multiple times with the boat. They found she was likely knocked out by a single blow when she fell out of the boat or when the boat unintentionally hit her as Tom searched for her. An accidental drowning, like Tom said. Jim says that Dr. McGee wasn't using science when he made his homicide determination. He was working backwards from the police suspicions to make his findings fit.
Totally unmoored from the way medical examiners should be doing their job.
And McGee has a reputation now. Am I correct?
He does. A federal judge had actually found that McGee had given misleading testimony in that case and noted the fact that Dr. McGee had a troubling pattern of providing false or inaccurate testimony in court. And I'll even say for our organization, Great North Innocence Project, we are not a large organization, but we've gotten three convictions vacated where Dr. McGee was the medical examiner who did the autopsy and testified in their cases.
The investigation also uncovered a Brady violation. The prosecution withheld a memo of a conversation with Dr. McGee in which he admits he's unsure if Jane was struck once or multiple times.
This was totally different from what the state ends up arguing at trial, which is this is premeditated murder because we know she was struck multiple times.
Totally inconsistent with what Dr. McGee had said earlier. After 25 years in prison, on January 13th, 2023, a district court judge vacated Thomas Rhodes' murder conviction. However, Tom is still a convicted felon. He agreed to an Alford plea for a lesser manslaughter conviction for driving with negligence. The Alford plea allowed Tom to maintain his innocence, but get out of prison right away. And at his age, missing so much of his children's and now grandchildren's life,
he did what anyone in his situation would do, and he took the deal that was offered to him.
And that's why it still comes up on the record?
That will still come up on a record because it's a felony conviction.
Right.
For now.
So you're working on that.
We'll see what happens.
Sneaky.
Tom was the first person released under the partnership with the Minnesota Conviction Review Unit and the Great North Innocence Project.
It was unbelievable to see him finally be able to walk through those doors. Sorry to be a little sappy here. It's a lot thinking back of all the things that our family went through and all the things that Tom went through. It's hard. It's hard to relive that.
It was awesome. It was surreal. I couldn't believe it. I was very emotional.
All of us were.
Jim, you've just been crying over there.
Stop. Don't look at me.
I'm like, is he sweating or is it tears? It's a
lot. This guy gets me every time. He's the worst. Man.
He doesn't have tissues.
I didn't realize I was going to get this emotional. Jim and the people at the Innocence Project have been there for me in ways I could have never imagined.
While Tom was in prison, he took up art to help survive.
I had about 250 paintings I painted, places like the favorite road in the country to where we mushroom hunted as a little boy, to things I did with my sons and our life, animals, a lot of animal art.
Jim and folks at the Great North Innocence Project thought, since Tom has struggled to find a job with his felony conviction, and
unlike the greedy person they portrayed, did not spend any money from my house, from any of my assets. I put it in a trust for my son's education, make sure that they got an education and were taken care of.
Why not get Tom's art out of storage and sell it?
They helped me put a business together called Thomas D. Galleries. And I'm selling prints and originals. And I've been taking pictures of some animals and looking forward to maybe doing some commissions of people's pets and stuff as well.
Tom struggles with PTSD from his time in prison. But after almost 2 years of freedom, he's feeling better adjusted.
I can really enjoy this freedom where I went through a lot this for the first year. But I just want to credit, people that have been there for me, like the Great North Innocence Project, my sons, my friends, and I have six grandkids, and I'm just loving that I can have a relationship with them outside of a prison visit room.
And Tom is especially just loving being free.
One of my biggest joys is just being able to hop in my truck, my old truck, and just go someplace when I want to, not having limitations.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Please support your local innocence organizations and go to the links in the episode description to see how you can help. And please consider checking out Tom's gallery, Thomas D. Galleries, to support him in his transition to freedom. go to thomasdgalleries.com or check out the link in our episode description. This episode was written by me, Maggie Freeling, with story editing and sound design by senior producer Rebecca Ibarra. Our producer is Kathleen Fink. Our researcher is Shelby Sorrells, with mixing by Josh Allen and additional production help by Jeff Clyburn and Connor Hall. Executive producers are Jason Flom, Jeff Kempler, and Kevin Wordis. The music is by three-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Make sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on all platforms at Maggie Freeling. Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling is a production of Lava for Good podcast in association with Signal Company Number 1. And a note on programming, we're taking Monday off next week and re-airing an interview between Jason Flom and Keith Washington in honor of Veterans Day.
Hey everyone, it's Jay Shetty, and I am so excited to let you know that my latest podcast interview is with the one and only Tom Hanks.
I have left many wonderful atmosphere or a loving atmosphere without thinking, oh, things were really wonderful back then. I wish I was back there. Jay, I don't think I've ever thought that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hey, I'm Jacquees Thomas, the host of a brand new Black Effect original series, Black Lit, the podcast for diving deep into the rich world of Black literature. Black Lit is for the page turners, for those who listen to audiobooks while running errands or at the end of a busy day. From thought-provoking novels to powerful poetry, we'll explore the stories that shape our culture. Listen to Black Lit on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Gracias Come Again, a podcast by Honey German, where we get real and dive straight into todo lo actual y viral. We're talking música, los premios, el chisme, and all things trending in my cultura. I'm bringing you all the latest happening in our entertainment world and some fun and impactful interviews with your favorite Latin artists, comedians, actors, and influencers. Each week, we get deep and raw life stories, combos on the issues that matter to us, and it's all packed with gems, fun, straight-up comedia, and that sazón that only nuestra gente can spread. Listen to Gracias Come Again on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.